Ready to level up your day? Then join me and my friends at LoneStarCasino.com. That's L-O-N-E-S-T-A-R Casino, where you can experience the thrill of Las Vegas, no matter where you are. LoneStarCasino.com is an absolutely free-to-play social casino with thousands of games, daily bonuses, free spins, and jackpots that pop like fireworks. Hit pause on life and hit play on LoneStarCasino.com.
Lone Star Casino is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit LoneStarCasino.com for more details.
Sign up today for an incredible welcome bonus. Play bold. Win big. Ready to level up your day? Then join me and my friends at LoneStarCasino.com. That's L-O-N-E-S-T-A-R Casino, where you can experience the thrill of Las Vegas, no matter where you are. LoneStarCasino.com is an absolutely free-to-play social casino with thousands of games, daily bonuses, free spins, and jackpots that pop like fireworks. Hit pause on life and hit play on LoneStarCasino.com.
Lone Star Casino is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit LoneStarCasino.com for more details.
Sign up today for an incredible welcome bonus. Play bold. Win big.
This is continuing coverage.
The Black Swan murder trial of Ashley Benefield from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
Now back to the courtroom.
During this time, did you speak with members of the sheriff's office?
I'm not sure specifically what time you're referring to.
During the time that there were allegations that Doug was abusing Emerson, did you speak to the sheriff's office?
Yes, ma'am.
On numerous occasions?
I would say so, yes.
At least five?
Probably, yes, ma'am.
And during those conversations, you were making allegations that Doug was abusing Emerson, right?
I was explaining the injury she'd come home with. I mean, I wasn't there. I don't know what happened.
Okay, but you were alleging that Doug was abusing the child.
I was concerned after her pediatrician called CPS and said that she thought she was being abused.
Are you aware that pediatricians are required to call CPS when a mother alleges that?
I didn't allege anything. I brought a video to show her at the appointment, and she called CPS.
Finish your answer, ma'am.
Well, after showing her a video of some behavior, she called CPS, and she informed me that I was also a mandatory reporter and that it would be negligent if I didn't also call and make a report.
You brought Emerson to the pediatrician specifically for this reason, correct?
No, ma'am. She had her checkup.
But you brought this up, the pediatrician.
At the end, she asked if either of us had any questions.
And that's when you bring up, she must be being abused.
No, I described to her the behavior that I was seeing, and I showed her a video when she came to her own conclusions.
Okay. So you spoke to the sheriff's office about that investigation and other investigations, and you about the investigations that Doug was abusing Emerson.
A sheriff usually comes out with the CPI from Child Protection.
And you spoke to them?
I mean, they were there when I was talking, I guess, yes.
And you were talking, making allegations against Doug, assuming that he caused injuries to Emerson.
I'm not sure of my exact words. I was trying to describe to them what I was seeing and my understanding of the situation at the time.
You filed a petition for an injunction based on those things, correct?
At the advice of my attorney, yes, ma'am.
Okay. Whether your attorney advised it or not, you chose to do that, correct?
Yes, I followed the advice of my attorney.
And you were aware that if you went forward on this injunction, that it was going to be in front of Judge Moreland?
Yes, ma'am.
And this injunction hearing was supposed to take place on September 30th of 2020. 2020.
Yeah, it got moved several times, but that was a date.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So it was supposed to take place on that day.
Yes, ma'am.
And there were other things pending. Do you know what the other pending items were?
Not specifically.
Okay.
I'm not sure what you're asking.
One of them was Doug's request for a divorce, correct?
Yes, we had both filed for divorce at that point, yes.
So Mr. Benefield filed for divorce, you file an injunction petition, then you file for divorce.
I filed for divorce first.
Okay.
I believe.
And then you're scheduled to have this hearing.
Yes, at 9:30, yes.
And you're speaking with Doug during this time, right? I mean, we just heard 200 and whatever texts between you and Doug.
Yes, ma'am.
So do you at any time in that say to him, I'm going to go forward with this injunction on Wednesday, on the 30th?
No, ma'am.
In fact, based on those text messages, you were dropping the petition for an injunction.
Yes, we talked, yes. Okay.
No, you talked about it, but you said you were going to.
Yes, ma'am.
And that is what the result of the mediation was, that there was not going to be any mediation. because you were reconciling.
We agreed, I guess, in order to move to Maryland, ending, the attorneys were advising us to, if we closed things down, that it would make it easier, like legal-wise, for us to relocate.
So you were telling Doug that's what you were going to do?
Yes, we were trying to work things out so we could all go to Maryland, yes.
And drop the injunction?
That was one of the things.
Okay. And you wanted him to drop everything, right? The motion to release the report, the dissolution of marriage, you wanted him to drop everything?
No, we filed a joint stipulation so we could get the report.
But then you asked him to drop that, didn't you?
Possibly. I know we kind of went back and forth with so many things.
Okay. You never had any intention of not going forward on your injunction.
Honestly, it was kind of one of those things that some days I thought that maybe I should, and some days I thought that I shouldn't.
So during this 1 week before you shot up, you're talking and you're saying to him things like, oh, we're packing boxes, we're getting everything together. This whole time, you knew you weren't going to stop that injunction hearing.
I hadn't decided yet.
Okay. Your attorney testified that you were going forward on that injunction hearing.
She was advising me to keep it.
Okay. So during this time when you're telling Doug to bring different boxes, bring tape, you asked him to go to Selby Gardens, right?
Yes, we all went. I think we got lunch. We brought Emerson so she could play.
Okay. And you are having conflicted emotions about whether to go forward on an injunction.
Yes, ma'am.
While you're out having these types of experiences with them.
Yeah. Sometimes things are really good and other times they weren't.
Okay. And so how about, let's see. This is part of State's Exhibit 98.
I didn't know what it's doing. I think it's giving you clues that I gotta guess.
Is it like with words? Not safe.
Get real.
Second part.
Real.
Like working mother, not a working mother.
Working mother, not a working mother.
I live in a
slum.
Mommy.
Oh no, it's running out of time.
I live in a
house.
And,
real house. White.
Yeah.
Housewives of.
And this video was before you shot him, right?
I don't know the exact date.
When was? I mean, in your mind, it was very close to the time, correct?
Yeah, I'm sure it was right around then. I don't remember when
okay.
It was.
And during this time that you were having these text messages with Doug and you're planning to move to Maryland, there's no violence going on?
No.
No?
I guess not, no.
He's not hitting you?
No, ma'am.
He's not choking you?
No, ma'am.
He's not shoving you around?
No, ma'am.
So this entire time, there is no violence going on?
I don't know specifically what time frame you're talking about. I'm sorry.
But during this, let's say from 2018 to 2019, when you're not living with him.
I mean, if you classify violence as him like punching me or choking me.
I'm asking if there's physical violence during this time.
He could be rough sometimes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did he ever punch you?
Not during that time, no.
Did he ever hit you?
No, ma'am.
Did he ever use a weapon against during that time?
Not during that time, no.
So in between the time of 2019 to 2020, where you shot him, was there any physical violence?
I said sometimes he'd be a little rough, you know.
But other than that, he never was physically violent?
He didn't, like, punch holes in the walls or anything like that, no.
So when I asked you, has he been violent, you said, well, he didn't punch holes in the walls. Is that what you just said?
That's what I just said, yes, ma'am.
So punching a hole in a wall, too, is a definition when I ask, was he violent? Your definition of that is punching a hole in a wall.
I think that is violent.
Okay.
I'm not sure what you're asking.
So, just a sec. So I want to get to the day that all of this happened. This happened on a Sunday, right?
Yes, ma'am.
And you're moving on, or you have a hearing on Wednesday.
I believe that's correct, yes,
and you're
ma'am.
Moving right after that.
I think the actual day of move was kind of in flux. It seemed like it changed 1,000 times.
You're all getting in the car together. Not together, but you're driving cars together to go to Maryland.
I believe he was going to be driving the U-Haul and pulling his truck. And I think that my mom was driving her car and I was driving mine.
And you were telling him during that time that you were going to move to Maryland and attempt to reconcile?
No, ma'am.
You weren't telling him?
No, not in those words, no.
Did you hear Dr. Broder testify about that? That he said that when you were with Doug...
Objection.
So you're denying that you ever told Doug that you were wanting to reconcile with him?
I said I wanted to find a way that we could do things together as a family for Emerson's sake, you know? And that's why we started doing things differently. He wanted to move back in, you know, together, and I told him that I didn't want to do that. I didn't feel comfortable with that.
Did you say that in Dr. Broder's office, in front of Doug?
No, not in front of him.
So when you're with a safe person, a psychologist, you're not telling Doug that?
I'm sorry?
You're saying that you told Doug when it was just the two of you that you didn't want to move in together.
Yeah.
And you felt safe telling him, I don't want to move in with you, right?
Yes, we had that conversation many times, yes.
But you're in front of this psychologist, who one would think is a safe environment, with Doug sitting next to you. You hear Doug say to Dr. Broder, we are going to Maryland and we are going to try to reconcile, and you don't feel safe enough to tell Dr. Broder, no, that's not what I want to do.
I would want to make him look bad in front of somebody else.
Okay.
I wasn't going to disagree with him in front of anybody.
Okay. So the plan was to load up the truck, get everything done, and then move very shortly after the court hearing, right?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. And you had no intention of dropping that injunction, so you knew on the day of that hearing he was going to know, right?
I'm sorry?
You knew that Doug was going to know that you had no intention of reconciling with him.
We had had the conversation many times. I think he understood where I was at.
Okay. You saw the text messages between you and him, right?
Yes, ma'am.
Would you agree that those text messages do not indicate that?
It doesn't say we're getting back together, moving in together.
It doesn't say we're not going to reconcile.
I mean, not specifically, no. I wasn't going to argue with him.
If you got your injunction on that day, September 30th, how would you have moved together?
I'll sustain.
What was your plan if that injunction was granted?
Different question. Overruled. Objection. Speculative. No, it's inappropriate.
So if the injunction were granted on that day, what was your plan about moving to Maryland with Doug?
I don't know that I really had a plan. I wasn't even sure whether or not I was going to go through the injunction at that point.
There's something funny.
Okay, so I want to get to the night that all this happened. So you knew Doug was coming over.
Yes.
You invited him over.
Yes.
To help you move stuff in the house.
Well, specifically stuff in the garage, but yes.
Stuff in the garage to the truck.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And he came to your house a couple of times. He came and then left and then came back.
Yeah, I believe he came twice that day.
And there is a gate to your community.
Mm-hmm.
And when he's at the gate, you had to let him in.
Sometimes, because he was frequent in and out, sometimes the gate remembers license plates, and sometimes it opens, and sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes he would just follow people in. The gate kind of stays open for a while. Sorry.
But on this day, you weren't concerned about him coming?
No, I knew he was coming.
Okay. And when he came over, your mother and Emerson went to the park?
I believe they were headed there. I'm not sure. I think they were down the driveway or on the sidewalk, something like that. They were on their way there.
You weren't so afraid that you wanted your mother to stay there and watch?
No, we were just packing to move.
Okay, so you weren't afraid?
I definitely didn't expect this to happen.
So it was of you that your mother left?
Yeah, at that time.
Okay. So if I heard you right during your direct, you said he bumped your shoulder twice, body check, I don't know if that's what you called it. He walked into you with a box, right?
Yes.
And then at the end, you say he slapped you?
He hit me. I wouldn't know how to classify it. He struck me, he hit me.
Was his hand open or closed?
I don't remember.
Okay. And because of those things, you claimed that you thought he was going to kill you.
He had never hit me before.
Okay. And you thought he was going to kill you.
He wouldn't let me leave. I tried to leave. He stopped. Me.
The question is, you thought gonna kill you?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, when you were in the bedroom, you decided to get your fire, and it was where?
was in a storage bin on top of the laundry basket.
Okay, so I'm going to show you State's Exhibit 52. If you could turn around and look at that. Where was your firearm?
It was in the bin on top of the basket.
Here?
That's the basket, the
laundry
basket.
Where was the bin?
It's that right on top.
Okay, so it was in here?
Yes, ma'am.
Why would you have a firearm in there?
I had just emptied all the furniture and everything out of my room, and it was kind of like what was left from my drawers, and so it got put into a bin.
Okay, and that was not your only firearm in that room, correct?
Correct.
You had a firearm in the closet.
My carry gun was in my backpack, which is my purse at the time.
So in this room, with a mattress and a broom and a hamper, you had two firearms?
Yes.
So you go into the room and you grab your firearm. Is it in a holster?
I don't remember.
Okay. And you claim that Doug does what?
He came and slammed the door open. He was standing in the doorway. He said, "You're fucking done."
He said, "You're fucking done." And that made you fear for your life.
Yeah.
Can we turn the lights up? Thank you. So he says, "You're fucking done," and you point the gun and you shoot.
I held it out in front of me first so he could see it. And I said, "Stop."
Hey, Judge, if I could have her step down, she demonstrate.
You may.
If you could just come down. So Doug opens the door and does what?
Standing in the doorway. He said, "You're fucking done." And I held the gun out in front of me and said, "Stop." He got into this like biting pose where he like turned sideways. And he was like moving around with his like arms and his hands. And he started like inching forward towards me.
So why do you call it a fighting stance?
He looked like a fighter. Like a... I'm like a ninja or something, I don't know.
Okay, so he's standing there, he turns to like this, and starts moving his arms around.
Like that.
Well, show me, what was he doing?
Kind of like, I don't know, he got like this, and he was like making like fighting motions. I don't know, I'm not a fighter, I don't know.
Okay.
It was scary.
Did he have his hands and fists?
Not at that point, they were like, I don't know.
Was he coming at you like this?
And he lunged at me. He came very quickly.
Okay, so he lunged. Was his fist up when he lunged?
I don't remember.
Okay. So you start shooting, and he does what?
He kept coming at me.
Okay, so then you keep shooting again. And he falls down on his back?
His legs went up in the air.
Okay, where do his legs go?
In the air.
How high in the air?
I don't know.
Do they go over his head?
I don't know, it's like his feet slipped out.
Okay.
And his feet and his legs went up in the air.
And were you still shooting at the time?
I don't remember.
You can have a seat. So after this incident, you claim that you had swelling to your face, right?
It's going to take a minute. All right, members of the jury, please close up your notes, put them on your chairs. I'm going to ask you to step out for a minute and use the facilities. It's not quite our mid-afternoon break, but we'll treat it as such. Please don't discuss the case amongst yourselves. Don't discuss it with anybody outside the jury. Don't do any research like we've talked about. All right, the jury's out. You can have a seat.
I'm sorry.
All right, we'll take 5 minutes.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you.
y'all can have a seat. Welcome back, everybody. Usual questions. Did anybody discuss the case or anything about the case amongst yourselves with anybody outside the jury or do any research?
No, sir.
Everybody says no. You may resume your cross-examination.
Thank you. Can we dim the lights again, please? Thank you. So after this incident, you said you had swelling.
Yes, ma'am.
And that would be to the left side of your face?
Yes, ma'am.
And that would be where? Show me where.
Like in this area.
Okay. Now I'm going to show you State's Exhibit 103. I'm going to put it up on the big screen. Can you tell me what this is?
It's a picture of me.
And when was it taken?
I have no idea.
Was this taken before you met Doug?
I believe so.
And I'm going to show you Exhibit 104. And I'll move it up a little bit. When was this picture taken?
I believe in October of 2020.
Wasn't it taken on November 4th of 2020?
I believe that's correct. I'm sorry.
Thank you. I have no further questions.
Redirect.
No further questions.
All right, ma'am. You can retake your seat. Just leave that exhibit there. No, you're not, you can take your water. I meant the paper.
Okay.
There you go. Yeah, the clerk. Thank you. All right, defense, call your next witness.
I believe it's Mara Sweet, Your Honor. We're just checking to make sure she's here.
Judge, I think we need to have a conversation.
Okay. So I'm going to let you step in the back so we can have our legal conversations. I'll get you back out as soon as I can. Don't begin your deliberations. You're free to use your phones, but don't communicate about the case with anybody outside the jury. Don't do any research on those things.
She got all those exhibits back.
Wait, you can all have a seat.
Okay,
thank you. She counts them on a regular basis.
Thank you. I just didn't want to have any over here.
Okay, so we got a proponent, we've got an objection. Is the witness in here?
No, she's right outside.
Okay, good. I want to make sure she stepped out. Okay, so the defense has called a Miss Sweet, who apparently is a former prosecutor in the 12th Circuit.
Yes.
And she, if I understand correctly, she was assigned in the misdemeanor division, domestic violence division, and the case, the alleged violation of domestic injunction regarding the T-set was assigned to her.
Correct.
And you expect her testimony to be that she intended to file the charge. She was waiting on a some receipt.
Packet.
Like a mailing receipt?
Yes.
That would have shown what, the return?
That Stephanie Murphy, the detective, killed.
And then you believe her testimony would be that she intended to file the charge, but then she was transferred out of that division.
It
left the office, okay. Because that's one of the temporary assignments that they give to misdemeanor folks. So she left the office, and that's it?
Well, and her training, based on domestic violence training, she believed Ashley to be a victim of domestic abuse, and that Ashley exhibited all the symptoms of domestic abuse, in particular, remaining quiet as a result of intimidation and going, for example, the state's case is predicated on Miss Benefield going along with Douglas Benefield, for example, on the first parent sharing exchange. And the week leading up to the shooting, they put in those 263 text messages and the video at the restaurant, all showing Miss Benefield and Mr. Benefield's company as apparently happy and not afraid. And abused, those are the classic symptoms exhibited by abused women. They are afraid to reject the abuser for fear of reprisal. And what happens is, after a while, they reach a state of compliance where physical threats are no longer necessary because they know what the potential is. So they become compliant. That's also what Bruce Ferris is going to enlighten the jury on. And I remind the court that this is the state's theory. They have put into play, they injected it, they raised it, initiated it, that because Miss Benefield didn't look scared in the company of Douglas Benefield, and that she was exchanging these text messages with him for the week leading up to the shooting with smiling faces and basically compliant behavior, that shows that her claim to fear of Douglas Benefield on the 27th is a fraud. And we now need to explain to the jurors why an abused woman would act like that and would, for example, not agree to be present at the first parent sharing exchange. When a child is involved, it magnifies the situation so that the mom, if she's afraid of, in this case, Mr. Benefield because of prior acts of domestic violence, she's even more afraid of for her child. So the mother's going to make it a point to accompany the abuser in an effort to protect her child. That's what we are now obligated to show to properly defend this case. And we can do that through the training and expertise of Samar Sweet, as well as Bruce Ferris.
Judge, first of all, this witness was not listed as an expert, because if she had been listed as an expert, I would challenge the qualifications to be an expert. Just for your Honor's knowledge, we did not have a domestic violence unit at the time. I know our office has in the past. We did not have a domestic violence unit, so she was not in any domestic violence unit. Even if she were an expert, there is absolutely no way that she could testify that she felt that Ms. Benefield was exhibiting behaviors of an abused person. I think it's completely improper. And the issue of the decline of the injunction, or the fact that Ms. Sweet intended to file, is irrelevant. I can tell Your Honor, and for the court's knowledge, it's because when we got the receipt of when that package was sent, that receipt showed a date that was a problem for us. And that is why that case was declined. So the decision was made after Ms. Sweet left the office and we received the receipt. So the would be testifying, I believed her and I wanted to file it, is completely and totally irrelevant.
Yes, sir. Rebuttal?
Yeah. So the court may recall that Deputy Weber had issued a capias for the arrest of Douglas Benefield for the delivery of this package. Detective Gillum came into court and told us that he suspended Deputy Weber's request for a habeas, and we have a communication from Deputy Gillum that we got by way of a public records request where he acknowledges plain as day that it was a violation, that it was during the time that the South Carolina injunction was in effect. But he nonetheless refers it to the state attorney's office. This is the assistant state attorney that was working that case. She would testify, we'd like to put her up for a proffer, that she fully intended to file. She believed it was clearly a violation based on the fact that the court...
Well, I'm just saying, if you want to proffer, let's get her in and proffer, because then all these arguments would happen after the proffer.
Okay.
I mean, but I haven't made a ruling, so I'm just... You can make your argument, I can make a preliminary written proffer.
Okay.
Mr. Taylor, you didn't go outside. So, listen, how about I do this? The jury's out. It's about 3 o'clock. I'm thinking maybe give them a 20-minute, a longer afternoon break. When I do that in the afternoons, I will typically have a deputy escort them down to the jury assembly room where they can kind of spread out. The machines are there, the restrooms, but deputies are with them. Okay? All right, deputy, can you excuse them till about 3:20? We'll get them back up as soon as we can. Thank you. Yeah, it's a proffer. Hello, ma'am. My name is Judge White. I'm presiding over this case. As the deputy said, just make yourself... Go ahead and sit down. Make yourself comfortable in this seat. Pull yourself up so you're about 12 to 15 inches from that microphone. There you go. To adjust up, down, left, right, however you need it. Speak in a loud, clear voice. You'll hear everything. As you can see, I'll tell you, you're a former prosecutor and attorney. Jury is not here. At this point, the defense is going to proffer your testimony.
Okay.
Afternoon, Sweet. Will you tell us your full name and spell your last name?
Yes, Samara Sweet, S-W-E-E-T.
Are you currently employed?
I am.
What's your title and where are you employed?
I am the trial lead of counsel at Lidecker, which is a civil litigation firm.
All right, and you're a Florida Bar licensed attorney?
Yes, sir.
At one point, were you a staff attorney for the Manatee County State Attorney's Office?
Yes, I was.
How long did you serve in that capacity?
I was there from 2018 to 2022. It's about 4.5 years, I believe.
All right. And during that 4.5 year stint, was there any special assignment that you held?
I began with the misdemeanor division here in Manatee County. After 6 months, I moved to Arcadia. So I was in DeSoto County, where I started in misdemeanors and moved up into felonies, where I would have dealt with anything from possessions of controlled substances all the way up to child sex crimes and murders.
Specifically, did you have any training in domestic violence?
We did. Every attorney at the state attorney's office does go through CLE's trainings on how to deal with domestic violence victims, because especially when you're working in the misdemeanor portion, a lot of your crimes are batteries and a lot of them are domestic violence victims.
Can you give us an idea of how many cases you handled involving domestic violence?
Oh, I think at one point my caseload was 700 when I was in Arcadia, and at least a third of those were probably something domestic violence related.
Did you deal with not only abusers, but the abused?
Yes. Most of the cases I had as a prosecutor, my victims were abused individuals.
Were the majority of your victims in domestic violence cases females?
I would say a large amount were females, yes.
Were you assigned, while in your capacity as an assistant state attorney for the 12th Judicial Circuit, were you assigned to a matter involving Ashley Benefield?
I was, yes.
How did that come to pass?
So when I was in Manatee, I had the caseloads with all defendants that had the last names with E, D, or I. So Ashley Benefield's case came to me, and she was the victim in the case that had been assigned to me for a violation of an injunction.
Do you recall specifically the nature of the violation?
It was a package that had been delivered to her allegedly from her ex-husband.
All right, and the domestic violence injunction that was violated, do you recall from where it had been issued?
It was from out of state. I believe it was South Carolina.
And did you meet with Ms. Benefield?
I did.
Do you remember on how many occasions?
I believe it was twice, because when the case first came, there's elements to a violation of injunction that have to be met. We had not yet had all the information, so I did meet with Ms. Benefield, got some more information, and then had to follow up on the investigation. I had to meet with her again after that.
Did there come a point in time when you made a filing decision?
I did not. I had left the office before a filing decision was made. I had been moved to Arcadia at that point.
I should have articulated that question better. Had you, as part of your investigation, individually reached a conclusion as to whether or not you felt it justified going forward and charging?
I did. I think I was still waiting on some information to prove if the package had actually been sent by Mr. Benefield. And that was the last information that I had left to my predecessor before I left. But I did think that if that information was given, there was enough to file.
And would it help refresh your recollection if I suggested that you were waiting on a copy of the receipt for the package?
Yes, I was waiting on to see who had sent that, and I know I had been in contact with the officers involved.
Do you recall whether or not you were dealing with Detective Gillum?
That I'm very bad with names, so I do not want to say yes or no, sir, if it was Detective Gillum or not. That does sound familiar, but I might have worked with him on other cases as well.
All right. How was Ashley Benefield when you first met her? Can you describe her demeanor?
Yes, she was very upset. She seemed scared, worried. She had come to my office, and she was crying when she was sitting in my office with me. I did think that she was worried about the package that had been received.
Now, was it your practice generally to always meet with the victims in the cases that you were prosecuting?
Yes, it's office policy.
Had you formed an opinion about the genuineness of the fear that Ms. Benefield expressed?
I did believe that she was in fear and worried about that.
And from the investigation that you conducted, did it vindicate, other than the actual label for the package, the factual representations that Ms. Benefield had made to you?
Can you
want me to restate that?
Yes, please.
Yeah, that didn't come out too good. Did your investigation corroborate facts that Ms. Benefield related to you?
It did, yes. There had been a package received. The package, I know she believed, had some weird smell coming from it, and my recollection was that had been investigated, but the package had been delivered to her. I think she said it was close to her birthday around that date. I can't remember exactly, but it did. The facts that I had investigated did lead up. South Carolina, when I reached out to them, had said they had given an injunction for her.
All right, and do you recall contacting toxicologists with respect to the contents of that package?
I did. She had brought me a toxicology report on that meeting, and I did call the doctor. Now, in all candor, I can't confirm if that's exactly the doctor, but I did speak to someone on the phone who said that Ashley did have weird things in her blood system at the time that did not correlate to someone's normal toxicology, but she couldn't say from where that had come from, but that there were abnormalities in that report.
And you say you have considerable experience with women who have been victims of domestic violence?
Yes.
Is there a certain pattern in your training and experience that you see in these women?
Yes. So a lot of times we'll have a lot of these meetings involve an abuser. We have the abuser who has abused someone. By the time they're coming to us, a lot of time has passed. So we always want to explain to them that normally we see a cycle. You have an abuser, he does something wrong. Then it's, I'm sorry, I'm very, very nice. They come back, and then we end up again in this situation with more abuse.
Kind of like a hamster wheel.
Yes.
Did you form an opinion as to whether or not in your discussions with Ms. Benefield that she fit the profile of an abused woman?
I did. When we discussed, she did seem that she had been isolated at that time. She was very scared. The way she had spoken to me did give rise. She had mentioned some minor physical issues that had been occurring, but abuse doesn't always have to be physical. Sometimes it's psychological, mental, emotional. And she was in my office when she was sitting. She did seem to be presenting like that.
Is it a pattern and practice of abusers to employ psychological intimidation?
I mean, normally a lot of the times in the reports I would have, we would have something of threats or some sort of information leading up, text messages, Facebook messages, things of that sort.
And let me ask you this. Are these abused women, despite their fear, often in the company of the abuser?
A lot of times I've seen them return back to their abusers, yes.
And have you experienced
experienced abused women when in the company of the abuser, acting as if everything is fine.
I wouldn't be able to say I've seen them with their abusers, but a lot of times if we were in court trying to present, I would see them come in to defend the defendant that we had or with to withdraw claims and that kind of thing.
I guess the point of my questioning is, merely because the woman appears content, is that an indication that she's happy in the company of the abuser?
No.
Why is that?
Just, I mean, I have more facts by the time I've seen the investigations, I've seen interviews, things of that sort in our caseload. They might be presenting, telling the judge something, but clearly we've seen, you know, photos of abuse. They've sat and given us recollections of abuse, that kind of thing.
You left the office before you were able to actually conclude and file a charging document.
That's correct.
And as you sit here today, do you know whether what the disposition was?
I believe it was decided to not move forward, so it was dismissed.
That's all, Your Honor.
Close.
When you were in the misdemeanor division in Manatee, I think you said 6 months.
Yes.
So what was the time frame then?
I know I had started, I want to say, April of 2018. So it would have been 6 months from there, because I think I got out to Arcadia around October, November-ish.
Okay. And was the misdemeanor job in Manatee your first job out of law school?
No.
No. Okay. Did you work, where did you work before that?
Before I worked with Eric Reisinger, I actually did criminal defense.
Okay. All right. So when you talked about the domestic violence training, were you referring to the domestic violence training at state attorney's office?
Yes.
Okay. And was that the normal domestic violence that everyone is sent to, the class?
Yes.
And how long is that class?
I think it's 4 days.
Okay. And is there any other domestic training?
I know the office does some pretty good domestic training. They'll do PowerPoints, luncheons, things of that sort. I think there's some, I don't know if they still do it because now I'm aging myself, field trips to like the TILA and some of those organizations that work with abused women.
Okay. Thank you. I don't have any other questions.
Thank you.
No, I think that's gone.
All right, ma'am, could you step back out to the hallway, please?
Yes, sir.
All right, she's out. Proponent, you can start with your... There you go. She's waiting in the ante room. Now we got her in the hallway. Proponent of the evidence, argument.
Yes. So, Your Honor may remember that Detective Gillum made the allegations 2.5 years later, despite the fact that there was no earlier report documenting what he alleged 2.5 years later in any of his 2 or 3 prior supplements, that Ms. Benefield acted completely inappropriately, that he did not believe that the South Carolina domestic violence injunction was in effect, because even though the hearing was on November 3rd, the judge hadn't signed the order till the end of the month, and therefore he countermanded Deputy Weber's request for a capias. This witness impeaches the statement by Detective Gillum because she was the assistant assigned to the case at the time, and she had made a decision that in fact she was going to file, but for the fact that she left the office beforehand. She had conducted the investigation, completed it. All she was waiting on was the label of the package, which, interestingly enough, the court may recall, Detective Gillum recovered from Stephanie, but it apparently didn't make its way to Samara Sweet until after she left the office.
All right. And the objecting party?
Judge, I would object. I don't think she can testify as to anything she just testified to. I think most of it is opinion, and she is not an expert. And even if she was an expert, she wasn't listed as an expert. So she cannot give opinions. And any opinion about whether someone, as a prosecutor, whether someone violated the law or not, is inappropriate testimony for court. A lot goes into filing decisions. The prosecutor has discretion the same way police officers have discretion. To add any significance to that, I think, would be completely improper. And so I would object to anything to do with her decision-making with the state attorney's office. And also, as I said, I think there was some information that was gained after she left that played into that decision. But additionally, I think she would not qualify as an expert of domestic violence, and I think even if she could, a lot of those things would be inadmissible anyway, that she would say.
All right. Mr. Taylor, do you have any final thoughts you wanted to put on the record? Any final thoughts, rebuttal?
No,
all right, thank you. So one of the very things about this case as we've gone along is there's been some very, I think I said the other day, unique legal arguments that have been made. Certainly, I would like to think it's in honor of the Olympics starting tonight that you guys have put me through my mental gymnastics for the last couple of months. You know, another judge that's here in Manatee County, I hear him say this a lot, and I think it rings true. There are some very difficult decisions that we make as judges, emotionally difficult, legally difficult, factually difficult. This is not one of them. This is a very, very clear and easy decision. I'm going to put the part about Ms. Sweet offering any sorts of opinion as an expert kind of to the side, because I resolved this matter well before I consider that she wasn't listed as an expert and the Richardson aspects of that. And what I want to focus on is the purpose of allowing these other incidents of violence or threats is, as we all know, it's one of the carve-outs. Obviously, case law provides an exception in stand your ground and self-defense cases for battered spouse syndrome. Normally, any peculiarities for a particular defendant, PTSD, low IQ, mental health, are the ones that come to mind quickly, are not relevant and not admissible in a self-defense case because it's a reasonable person standard. So battered spouse syndrome is the carve-out, and the idea by once the defendant has laid the predicate of the overt act, allowing either reputation, and if it's reputation in a relevant community, we've all agreed, well, should agree, the case law says that the defendant doesn't have to know about that. It's just reputation evidence. On the flip side, whenever you want to get into specific acts of violence, threats, intimidation, and I know our net that we've casted here is beyond just prior acts of violence. There's also been issues of threats and intimidation. It's come in, it's in. The case law talks specifically about why that evidence is allowed and why all of that is not hearsay, because it's not offered for the truth. It's offered to show that the jury, what did the defendant know at the time that the self-defense was used. And unlike the mental ailments I mentioned earlier or other peculiarities of the particular defendant, this is just to show why the defendant would have stayed and even if there wasn't an imminent violence at the moment, why that person would feel terrified and all the other battered spouse. I won't go into the whole thing. So the issue is not, did this assistant state attorney believe the defendant? Did this police officer take a report and submit a capias or not issue a capias and send it to the state as a non-arrest? Did this ASA file it or not file it? Did this ASA believe that the defendant was the victim of domestic violence or not? All of those things are completely irrelevant, not to mention prohibited from the witness commenting on ultimate facts or invading the province of the jury. The issue is not the truth or falsity of the violation of injunction or the shooting into the ceiling or any of those issues. That's not the issue. The issue is, was the defendant aware of these prior acts? Example being that the evidence came in regarding domestic violence by Mr. Benefield against his first wife. The way the defendant learned about that was some sort of text message by or between Mr. Benefield and the former Mrs. Benefield. Clearly hearsay. But why does it come in? Because she was aware of it and it shows some violent tendencies so she can testify about it, she can talk about it, the jury hears about it to help understand what she knew, and this is in the jury instructions as the attorneys know, what she knew at the moment that this incident was happening. So Ms. Sweet's testimony about whether she believed the defendant or not, whether she was going to file or not, the conversation, whether she thought that the defendant was genuine and legitimately a victim, The testimony that she called, she had some report and she called someone and there were some sort of abnormalities, unspecified abnormalities in some lab tests that she, you know, characteristics of domestic violence victims and so forth is just of no moment. So it's irrelevant. It's commenting on the testimony of and the credibility and veracity of other witnesses. It's commenting on ultimate facts. If you want to do talk about the expert portion of it, as the defense said, this is all the same things that Ferris is going to testify to. So in essence, I haven't heard his testimony, but if what I understood was everything, I believe it was something along the lines of what she's going to testify to is the same as what Mr. Ferris is, and I only say Mr. because I don't know his professional designation. So Mr. Ferris is going to testify to. Finally, on the issue of 403, Ms. Sweet's testimony, the probative value of that is substantially outweighed by the danger of confusion of the issues and misleading of the jury, because it does not matter whether that particular person believes it was a violation of injunction or not. The point is, the testimony is out. It's been demonstrated that the defendant knew about that. She's alleged it was a violation of injunction. There's a dispute. That'll be a factual issue for the jury to determine. But she's alleged it was a violation, which she took as intimidating, and the smell that caused her headache was some sort of physical ailment that would have been caused by the present that was provided. I understand that's her position. State may have a different argument on all that. But this is not even a difficult question. Ms. Sweet is not admissible as a witness. I am glad you proffered, though, because now it's all on there. But no, she's not going to be allowed to testify to what I heard today. Do you have another witness?
Yes.
All
right. Ferris.
We have an objection to him as well, Judge.
Oh, now, Mr. Ferris is the expert.
Yes.
And the state wanted to have a...
Judge, I'm sorry. We do have a lay witness that we want to get on. Amy Carlton, she's going to be quick. We need to get her back to work.
Hold on. Amy Carlton. And then... I assume, I know that's bad, that Mr. Ferris, tell me, does he have a professional designation? Is he a doctor? Or?
He's a licensed mental health counselor.
So he's Mr. Ferris.
Former deputy sheriff. His practice and his law enforcement experience has been combined exclusively to domestic violence. He teaches batterers.
I just want to know if he was had a professional designation that I should use. All right, so Mr. Ferris... looking at the time, I would think that after we finish with Ms. Carlton, the Daubert hearing is very likely going to take us to the end of the day. So I expect then we would probably start with Mr. Ferris on Monday. Mr. Taylor?
Well, Your Honor, actually, we have some case law that I was hoping would obviate the necessity for a Daubert hearing.
All right, well, do you want to handle Ms. Carlton first? All right.
Ms. O'Donnell just needed to go to the ladies' room, so.
Oh, all right.
If you want to bring them back in, that's fine.
We can start working them back up.
Yeah.
I think that'll be good. Right. So let me give you guys 5 minutes.
Thank
if you need to step out, Mr. Taylor, Ms. Benefield, if you need to step out and use the facilities, that'll be fine as well. We're going to start working on getting the jury up. It usually takes about 5-10 minutes.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks, George.
Okay, bring them in. Oh, does anybody need the screen?
No.
No, sir.
Oh, and can we get the site for the case, Mr. Taylor? Can we get the site for the case that you said you had with the dog?
I can do better than that. I can do
probably. Perfect. Thank you.
You can. I think I know exactly which one you're bringing me. Bring me, though. Y'all can have a seat. I see the jackets and the sweaters have gone on.
Yes.
Yeah. It You would think in the afternoon it would get warmer, but I told you, even with the southern exposure, somehow it just gets cooler and cooler and cooler. So. All right, while you were out, did anybody discuss the case amongst yourselves, talk about anything about the case, talk about anybody outside of the jury about the case, or do any research on people, places, things, or legal topics you've heard anything about?
No, sir.
All right, everybody says no. Mr. Taylor, call your next witness.
Amy Carl.
Testimony you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
Yes.
Hello, ma'am. My name is Judge White. I'm presiding over the case. As the deputy said, just make yourself comfortable in that chair. Get about 12 to 15 inches from the microphone. It does adjust up, down, left, or right if you need it. And just speak in a loud, clear voice and we'll hear everything. Can I just move you just a little bit forward?
Okay.
That's perfect. Thank you. Yes, sir, Mr. Taylor.
Good afternoon. Would you tell
Good
us
afternoon.
Your full name and state your last name, please? Spell your last name.
Spell my last name. C-A-R-L-T-O-N.
And your first name?
Okay.
Tell
I'm
us
sorry.
Your, what is your first name?
Amy, with a Y.
Okay, Amy. Or Ms. Carlton. Are you presently employed?
I'm presently employed, yes.
Yeah, where?
Where?
Where? For who?
I'm at one of the hotels in the area.
Okay. And what capacity do you serve in at the hotel?
I'm one of the managers.
How long you been doing that?
What was that?
How long you been doing that?
I've been with the ownership for 4 years now, going on 5.
Are you married?
Yes.
What's your husband's name?
Herbert.
Ms. Carlton, were you and your husband Herbert living in Bradenton, Manatee County, on September 30th, 2020?
Yes.
September 27th, 2020.
Yes, we were.
Do you recall that afternoon if you were outside with your husband?
Yes, we were.
Do you recall the address you lived at back then?
It was on Newport News Street or Drive. We've been renting, so to be honest with you, I don't recall the exact street, the number of the street, but it was Newport News.
Do you recall, Ms. Carlton, whether or not, what was the reason why you and your husband were out that afternoon?
I have a mini golden doodle, and we were taking a walk.
Did anything unusual occur while you were out with your husband and the dog?
The reason I'm here, you know it. I mean,
would you share it with us? What happened?
We were taking a walk, and Newport News is a couple streets over from the incident area, and it was probably 3 houses down where we were. And at the time, my dog was probably just over 1. So I don't know. I'm a big dog lover, and she's my life outside of work. With my husband, he and I both heard what I don't know. I didn't know what it to be, and he kind of grabbed my arm, and I kind of got startled because it did sound like gunshots. I don't know, you know, at the time we didn't know what it was, and but we heard one right after the other. And me, because of where I work, I've trained like the attack or panic mode. I am thinking of myself, sorry to be selfish, and my dog and my husband. And he's looking ahead too, and I just remember being a little bit terrified myself and thinking of myself, my family. And so I remember looking up and telling him, well, let's go, let's turn around, let's go back behind the house, because at the time we weren't sure what it was. And also being trained, you don't know what is to come next. First of all, you don't know what it is. So as I'm telling my husband, I told him, call 911. As I'm telling him that, I'm sorry, I'm backing back behind the house because you don't know what's coming next.
All right, let me ask you a couple of specific questions if I can.
Yes.
You say you heard some gunshots.
It sounded like gunshots.
All right. Now, after you heard the gunshots, did you observe anybody exit a house?
Quickly, as we were trying to make sure of our safety, we saw a lady leave the house. It was, I don't know exactly, like timing-wise, because it's like I said, my mind was going through a lot of things.
Let me just keep you on the questions, okay? I'll help you. I'll lead you through it. You hear the gunshots. The next next thing you see is what?
A lady came from the house and...
Describe?
I remember screaming, and that's just the vivid recollection and memory that I have, just the screaming, and came from the house running to the neighbor's house. I don't remember too much other than the screaming and pounding on the neighbor's front door.
Is it a safe bet for us to say that this lady that you saw exit the house screaming was hysterical?
Yes.
I want you to tell us, Ms. Carlton, after the gunshots, approximately how long it took for that woman to come running out of the house.
Oh, so I'm not sure I recall. It was within seconds, though. I mean, I didn't even have time, like I said, to pursue any hiding places. It was so quickly.
Do you remember speaking to the police about the incident?
We had an interview, yeah. It was probably 30 seconds, a minute. I don't know, 30 seconds.
Okay. So you hear the shots, and within 30 seconds, a screaming, hysterical woman comes running out of the house and goes to the neighbor's house. Did you hear banging on the door at the neighbor's house?
I don't recall if I remember stating that or not, but I remember the hysteria of the screaming.
Okay. That's all I have on it. Nope.
Can the witness be released?
Yes.
Yes.
Thank you, Ms. Carlton.
Thank you.
Ma'am, you've been released from your subpoena, so you're free to go. Thank you.
All right, go ahead and approach.
More continuing coverage is on the way.
The Black Swan murder trial of Ashley Benefield from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
Press subscribe now.
Ready to level up your day? Then join me and my friends at LoneStarCasino.com. That's LoneStar Casino, where you can experience the thrill of Las Vegas, no matter where you are. LoneStarCasino.com is an absolutely free-to-play social casino with thousands of games, daily bonuses, free spins, and jackpots that pop like fireworks. Hit pause on life and hit play on LoneStarCasino.com.
Lone Star Casino is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit LoneStarCasino.com for more details.
Sign up today for an incredible welcome bonus. Play bold. Win big. Ready to level up your day? Then join me and my friends at LoneStarCasino.com. That's LoneStar Casino, where you can experience the thrill of Las Vegas, no matter where you are. LoneStarCasino.com is an absolutely free-to-play social casino with thousands of games, daily bonuses, free spins, and jackpots that pop like fireworks. Hit pause on life and hit play on LoneStarCasino.com.
Lone Star Casino is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit LoneStarCasino.com for more details.
Sign up today for an incredible welcome bonus. Play bold. Win big. Ready to level up your day? Then join me and my friends at LoneStarCasino.com. That's LoneStar Casino, where you can experience the thrill of Las Vegas, no matter where you are. LoneStarCasino.com is an absolutely free-to-play social casino with thousands of games, daily bonuses, free spins, and jackpots that pop like fireworks. Hit pause on life and hit play on LoneStarCasino.com.
Lone Star Casino is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit LoneStarCasino.com for more details.
Sign up today for an incredible welcome bonus. Play bold. Win big. Ready to level up your day? Then join me and my friends at LoneStarCasino.com. That's LoneStar Casino, where you can experience the thrill of Las Vegas, no matter where you are. LoneStarCasino.com is an absolutely free-to-play social casino with thousands of games, daily bonuses, free spins, and jackpots that pop like fireworks. Hit pause on life and hit play on LoneStarCasino.com.
Lone Star Casino is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit LoneStarCasino.com for more details.
Sign up today for an incredible welcome bonus. Play bold. Win big. Ready to level up your day? Then join me and my friends at LoneStarCasino.com. That's LoneStar Casino, where you can experience the thrill of Las Vegas, no matter where you are. LoneStarCasino.com is an absolutely free-to-play social casino with thousands of games, daily bonuses, free spins, and jackpots that pop like fireworks. Hit pause on life and hit play on LoneStarCasino.com.
Lone Star Casino is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit LoneStarCasino.com for more details.
Sign up today for an incredible welcome bonus. Play bold. Win big. Ready to level up your day? Then join me and my friends at LoneStarCasino.com. That's LoneStar Casino, where you can experience the thrill of Las Vegas, no matter where you are. LoneStarCasino.com is an absolutely free-to-play social casino with thousands of games, daily bonuses, free spins, and jackpots that pop like fireworks. Hit pause on life and hit play on LoneStarCasino.com.
Lone Star Casino is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit LoneStarCasino.com for more details.
Sign up today for an incredible welcome bonus. Play bold. Win big.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.